It's great to see everybody today. Thank you very much for being a part of our services here at Azalea City. I do want to say thank you to those who have come our way that may be visiting with us today. Again, it is special to have visitors. It's special to have so many great members, and I'm thankful that we're all able to be here today. But I do have a couple pieces of good news to share with you today. First of all, I don't know which I'm going to say first, but I think I'll lead with what happened Wednesday night first. Wednesday night, after our services, it was a very special moment that happened back in our fellowship hall that led to the baptistry. So visiting with us for a few weeks now have been Chris and Dana Lambert and Jordan. Dana's son is also with us. He is at UAB. He's on spring break, and so he's been here Wednesday and today, and we're thankful for that. But Dana had been weighing some things in her mind, and Wednesday night she decided it is time to be a follower of Jesus Christ. It's time to be immersed in water for the remission of her sins. And so it was a very beautiful scene as I laid witness to that. And then also, if you are on Facebook and you can go to Azalea City's personal page on our Facebook there and see that beautiful scene, a husband baptizing his bride into the bride of Christ. It was very, very beautiful. So we want to say welcome to the family, to Dana. But then also, let me say this is twofold, okay? The Lamberts have decided they're going to be a part of Azalea City Church of Christ. And so we're very excited about all this. Chris is a hard guy to miss, but if Chris and Dana and Jordan stand up, please, and let's welcome them to Azalea City Church of Christ. Thank you very much. They are a sweet, sweet spirit. And they use their talents, they use their abilities for God. And I am so excited that God has walked them, led them to us here at Azalea City. It's a beautiful scene, beautiful family, a beautiful people. And there are going to be beautiful things happen with them and God and His kingdom here. So welcome officially to Azalea City Church of Christ. You know, I just am amazed at God. I'm amazed at what God does for us. And you know, just like Dana submitting herself to Christ in baptism, she's come up out of that water now and she's living a life that is in accordance to God's will, but she's still going to have the devil attack her. You and I did the same thing. And guess what? It's no magic potion, is it, that all of a sudden now we are cured and protected from the temptations of the devil. We do not have some magic formula that is going to keep us from facing the fiery darts of the devil. Now, we've got something that can shield it off. We've got something that can protect us from that. But the reality of life is this. From time to time, we as Christians will still struggle. You know, and I appreciate God laying it all out there for us. There's no surprises. In fact, Jesus told us, you will have tribulation. You're going to have trouble. You're going to have trials. You're going to have struggles. But He said, be of good cheer. Well, how can I cheer, Jesus, when I'm going through struggles? He said, I've overcome the world. I've overcome the very place that's going to cause you struggles. Today, as we talk about Jesus and we talk about life and we talk about Christianity and we talk about the church and we talk about and sing about love lifting me and all the things that we're talking about in this series of getting to know Jesus even better. One thing that we have to understand is that no matter where we are, there are going to be struggles that shackle us down. But you know, as I think about our theme and I think about what's going on in life, It reminds me that I need more Jesus. You know, the word more, we understand it pretty easily. And let me try to illustrate that. I have an addictive personality, which can be very, very dangerous. That's why I avoid certain things in life, at least try to. But there are times that, you know, when I taste sweet tea, I try not to drink it, because when I taste it, I just want more. I used to be that way with Mountain Dew. I just wanted more. Okay? You know, I don't have a great deal of hobbies, but for instance, one maybe going weightlifting. And so I really want to put all I can into that. I'm thinking, I'm 40 years old. I got to cram it all in before I lose it, right? And so, you know, I want more of that. But when it comes to, like, Oreos, I want more of those. When it comes to chocolate cake, I want more of that. We understand when it hits our tongue, when we can taste it, when it's something good, we want more. But folks, sometimes people say, I've had enough of Jesus. I had enough of Jesus this week. I'm not going to be there Sunday. I had enough of Jesus this month. I'm not going to be at there Wednesday night. I've had enough of Jesus this week. I've had enough of Jesus. Folks, that's the most foolish thing we could ever say. We need more Jesus. I don't care where we are in life. We need more. More of Him. And so that's why I've committed my studies and committed myself to learn and teach and understand more of what He wants from me. In order to have more Jesus, though, we've got to get rid of some things. And sometimes we can't let Jesus in because we're shackled and focused on the struggles we have in life. Well, you might say, what kind of struggles do we have? Well, I want you to think about struggles. Struggles can be sin, certainly, right? Certainly we can be shackled by sin. The devil, unfortunately, is so good at what he does. He can wrap the most venomous sin, the most toxic sin, in the most beautiful wrapper there is. I mean, think about it. You know, it's kind of like, this is a very silly illustration, but when you get your present wrapped by the department store. I don't even know if they do that anymore. But you get it all fancy wrapped or whatever, and inside the kid thinks, I've got this great present, but it's like underwear or something, you know, and it's terrible, right? They don't want that at all, but it's like the most attractive package. Well, that's what Satan is. Satan will take the vilest of sin and make it look so beautiful. Think about Eve. How good, I bet, whatever the fruit was, okay, and I know there's all kinds of debate on that, but whatever the fruit was, I bet it was very tasty. I bet it was juicy and sweet and just, it hit her taste buds, and she's been eating grass and she's been eating other things, you know, and that tasted, it tasted so good. That's the way Satan is. Sin feels good or no one would do it. It's at least fun for a little while or no one would do it. And so sometimes we are shackled up by sin and there's no room for Jesus. There's no room in the end. There's no room in the heart. But sometimes it's deeper than that. Sometimes it's an emotional struggle. You know, I've been very open with you about my life struggle with depression, about how it took away some of my joy in my life in some very critical years. And you know, I've really fought to get those back. But sometimes we can be beaten down so much emotionally and mentally that we can get so focused on that struggle and that shackle that we forget to give it to God. Maybe it's self-esteem. You know, think about this. The two greatest commandments, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, your soul, your strength. The second is likened to it, love your neighbor as what? Yourself. Well, what if I hate myself? And there are people today that do. There are people today that look in the mirror and they think that they've got to look like whichever celebrity and whichever superstar that has a personal trainer, that has a personal chef, that has a nutritionist, that has all these things. Remember, they've got, that's their job. But we think, we look at that, teenagers look at that and think, my body image is not that way, and so I struggle. And I struggle to love myself. And I'm shackled up by that because I can't love my neighbor because I don't love myself. And that's a struggle. There's financial struggles. Today, some of you may be in so much debt that you feel like your oxygen is being cut off. That there are hands around your neck and you're choking and you just have a few breaths and you feel like it's all coming down on you. That's a struggle we're shackled by. There are so many other things we could talk about today. There are so many things that we get wrapped up in. Maybe it's job. Maybe there's a family problem. Maybe some of you today haven't forgiven a parent because they walked out of your life. Maybe a child has walked out of your life. And it kills us and we're so torn up by it that we're shackled up and we can't allow Jesus in because of the struggles we have. Well, I want you to know today, we're going to talk about a story where there were struggles. Everyday struggles. You know what Jesus did? Those who were struggling, He wanted them to surrender it to Him so they could be His disciples. Turn in your Bibles, if you will, to Luke chapter 5. Luke chapter 5, this is Luke's account of the call of the first disciples by Jesus Christ. I'm going to read verses 1 through 11. I want you to read along with me. So it was, as the multitude pressed about Him, that's Jesus, to hear the Word of God, that He stood by the lake of Gennesaret and saw two boats standing by the lake. But the fishermen had gone from them and were washing their nets. Then He got into one of the boats, which was Simon's, that's Peter, and asked him to put out a little from the land. And He sat down and taught the multitudes from the boat. When He had stopped speaking, He said to Simon, "Launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch." Simon answered and said to Him, "Master, we have toiled all night and caught nothing. Nevertheless, at Your word, I will let down the net." And when they had done this, they caught a great number of fish, and their net was breaking. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both the boats so that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees saying, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." For He and all who were with Him were astonished at the catch of fish which they had taken. And so also were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, "Do not be afraid. From now on, you will catch men." So when they had brought their boats to land, they forsook all and followed Him. Now, when you see this story, you're going to see the nets, right? I see the nets and I see them filling up and I see them casting their nets overboard, basically because this guy who they recognize as a teacher told them to. But I want you to see that when Jesus goes to them, it's during a life struggle. It's during a struggle when He calls them. And here's what I mean by that. There are three struggles I want to talk about today. They were struggling in life. Did you see what they had done? They had pulled the boats in. They had pulled the nets in and they are washing them. Why are they washing the nets? Because they are done. Not because they had loaded out with fish. They had not reached the quota for the day, okay? They hadn't limited out, as we would call it today. There was no fish. They didn't just go out for an hour or two. They fished all night. This is not a hobby. This is a job. Their life was wrapped up in fishing. Peter, James, and John, they were fishermen by trade, and their livelihood depended on it. We know Peter had a wife. His wife depended on it. Their families depended on it. And they had fished all night, and they had had an awful night and day. And they had given up. At least on that occasion. I'm not saying they weren't going tomorrow, but on that occasion they said, enough is enough. And can you imagine as they're pulling them in? Again, just a bunch of fishermen. So there may be coarse talk, there may be rough talk, there may be all kinds of things. And they're sitting there and they're mad at the world. I am so mad. I cannot believe we didn't catch anything. And they might look over and they might see a bunch of fish that some of their competition had brought in. And they're dogging their name. Why? Because they are at rock bottom that day. Things had not gone their way. Can you imagine? Can you relate? You ever have bad days in life? Certainly you do. If you've never had a bad day in life, I really want to know what the secret is. Honestly, I really want to know how you did and I didn't. I have bad days. Listen, I've got the greatest job in the world. I do not exaggerate that. I really believe that. But there are bad days. There are days that I feel like I can't take it. There are days I feel like I'm mad. I'm tired of it. I'm fussing. I'm doing things that normally I wouldn't do if I was being the person I need to be. And so all of a sudden I look around and I think, why me? Right? Maybe Peter, James, and John had some why me that day. We talk about a struggle that maybe we don't, it doesn't come to the forefront of our mind. It does mine because I've been there, done that too. But think about a couple that's wanting to have children and there's infertility issues. You might think, well, that's not a big deal as you look down and you got about five children. But it is a big deal to that family. Now, where are you going with this, Terry? I want to take you back to 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 1. There's a story in there about a lady who has infertility issues. Her name's Hannah. Hannah is married to Elkanah. And Elkanah has two wives, which was legal to do then. He has Peninnah and he has Hannah. And he loves Hannah. Peninnah is able to get pregnant. And she's able to have children. But Hannah can't. For whatever reason, her womb is closed. She's not able to do that. And Peninnah, it would be so much better if Peninnah would be like, Hannah, I'm here for you. If I can do anything to help you. You know, we're co-wives. I don't know how all that works, but we're co-wives in all this. You know, I love you. I appreciate you. That's not how she was at all. She made fun of her. She belittled her. And just when you think things can't get any worse, the priest even piles on. Eli. Because Hannah's praying. Remember, she's praying so fervently. Her lips are moving. Those sounds coming out. And he's like, Hannah must be drunk. And so all this in life has caved her world in. She's feeling the shackles of struggle. But then she has a baby. God hears her prayer. He lifts her infertility and she gets pregnant. And she has Samuel, who happens to be the last judge, who happens to anoint King Saul and King David and be a great man of God. Literally means heard by God. But here's where I really want to get to this. When it's all said and done, Hannah, even though she struggled in life, she pens the words to a song in 1 Samuel 2. And they're beautiful words, and I want to read them to you today. Hannah prayed. It's really a prayer. My heart rejoices in the Lord. The Lord has made me strong. Now I have an answer for my enemies. I rejoice because you rescued me. No one is holy like the Lord. There is no one beside you. There is no rock like our God. Stop acting so proud and haughty. That could have been Israel, but it could have been a Peninnah too. I don't know. Don't speak with such arrogance. For the Lord is a God who knows what you have done. He will judge your actions. The bow of the mighty is now broken. And those who stumbled are now strong. Those who were well fed are now starving. Those who were starving are now full. The childless woman now has 7 children. The woman with many children wastes away. The Lord gives both death and life. He brings some down to the grave, but raises others up. The Lord makes some poor and others rich. He brings some down and lifts others up. He lifts the poor from the dust and the needy from the garbage dump. He sets them among princes, placing them in seats of honor. For all the earth is the Lord's, and He has set the world in order. He will protect His faithful ones, but the wicked will disappear in darkness. No one will succeed by strength alone. Those who fight against the Lord will be shattered. He thunders against them from heaven. The Lord judges throughout the earth. He gives power to His king. He increases the strength of His anointed one. Here's what Hannah said. God released my shackles. He took away my burdens. And I will give Him praise. You see, God went to work on Hannah. God went to work on Peter, James, and John, not in the moments of joy, but in the moments of struggle. And today, it's that same Jesus Christ who you are struggling in life. He's knocking on the door to your heart right now. And He's waiting with the key. To unshackle the shackles of struggle in your life. Peter, James, and John, Hannah, they struggled in life, but there are other struggles in this story in Luke 5. Here's another struggle. They struggled in faith. Look at it in verses 3 and 4. He got into one of the boats, which was Simon's, asked him to put out a little from the land. He sat down, taught the multitudes from the boat. He stopped speaking, verse 4. He said to Simon, launch out in the deep and let down your net. Simon answered and said to him, Master, we've toiled all night and caught nothing. Nevertheless, at your word, we'll do it. We'll let down the nets. Now, you might read that and think, wow. Simon said, yeah, we're still going to do it. I read it and think, I ain't got a lot of faith in this. You know, I listen, I know you're a man. You're a teacher of God. I recognize that. I really don't know who you are just yet. But out of respect for you, we'll do it. You know what that is? That was a struggle in faith. Today, if you've got a shackled up life, if you are struggling with whatever, fill in the blank, then chances are you've got a struggle in faith. Why? Because we haven't surrendered it to God. God says, let me have it. Come unto me, ye who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. But we do not believe that because we're unwilling to do it. He said, just try me. Peter stepped out in faith by just saying, oh, okay. And Jesus showed up. Jesus filled them up. They had fished all night, and in a matter of moments, they had caught so many fish that they were about to lose their boats. It just takes a little bit of faith to move a mountain. If you have the faith of a mustard seed, he said, you can move this mountain. But how many of us have mountains or even just have hills in our lives that we're trying to move on our own? We can't do it on our own. We've got to allow the one who can fill the nets. When I think about this, I think about Peter later on in life. Peter gets it after a while, right? He becomes a disciple. He walks to Jesus on the water. He swings at Malchus's head and misses and cuts his ear off. I'll die with you before I deny you. Oh no, Jesus said, you'll deny me. Matthew 26, verse 69. Now Peter was sitting outside in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him and said, you also were with Jesus the Galilean. But he denied it before them all, saying, I do not know what you mean. And when he went out to the entrance, another servant girl saw him, and she said to the bystanders, this man was with Jesus of Nazareth. And again he denied it with an oath, I do not know the man. After a little while, the bystanders came up and said to Peter, certainly you too are one of them, for your accent betrays you. He began to invoke a curse on himself and to swear, I do not know the man. And immediately the rooster crowed. And Peter remembered the saying of Jesus, before the rooster crows, you'll deny me three times. And he went out and wept bitterly. A man of God, a disciple of Jesus Christ, will be an apostle of Jesus Christ, will open the gates with the keys to the church, the kingdom of heaven. He will stand up in Acts 2 and preach that sermon, where 3,000 will respond. But that very man who struggled in Luke 5 still struggled in Matthew 26. And later we learned he struggled in Galatians 2. So here's the point. If Peter can struggle, so can we. If Peter can struggle with his faith, so will we. I mean, it will shock us to the core sometimes in life, and we will shout at the heavens, where are you, God? Why did you do this, God? But you got to remember, we may turn and yell at God, but He's still the one going to fill our nets. He's still the one going to release the shackles. He's still the one who's going to save the day. When it was all said and done, Peter still struggled in guilt. If you look down at verse 8, he fell down at Jesus' knees saying, depart from me, for I'm a sinful man, O Lord. Sometimes in life, we might overcome the struggle of life. We might overcome the struggle of faith. But sometimes we can't let go of the struggle of guilt. Peter, after he's seen this, he's just eaten up with guilt. I doubted him. I can't believe it. And now all of a sudden, get away from me. I do not deserve to be in your presence. You are way better than I am. I am just scum of the earth. And some of you today may feel like that same very thought. There have been a lot of people in Scripture that have felt that way. David is one of them. King David. A man after God's own heart was the man after Uriah's own wife. And he commits adultery with Bathsheba. She gets pregnant. His plan is, hey, we got to cover this up. So I send Uriah home. Hey man, you've been gone to war. You go home, spend time with your wife. Congratulations, Uriah, you're going to be a dad. That didn't work, okay. He slept at the door. So I know what now. I got to get him drunk. So he goes and he gets him drunk. Uriah will stagger his way back home. He'll be with his wife. Congratulations, Uriah, you're going to be a dad. No, that didn't work either. So I don't know what else to do. Let's put him on the front lines and let's kill him. And then I can take Bathsheba. and I can have a child with her. Well, that's what he does. And then Nathan shows up. Nathan doesn't come and just attack him. Remember that. He leads with a graceful story. He tells him about that poor man's sheep. He loved that sheep. He let that sheep sit with him at the table. And as just like his family, his own child, that poor man, though, the rich man took that poor man's sheep. David was infuriated. I want this man. He's going to pay back. He's going to pay. He's going to pay. He's going to pay. Nathan said, David, you are that rich man. So then what overcame David? Guilt. So he sat down and he penned these words, Psalm 51, "Have mercy upon me, O God. According to your loving kindness, according to the multitude of your tender mercies, blot out my transgressions, wash me thoroughly from my iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin. For I acknowledge my transgressions and my sin is always before me. Against you, you only have I sinned and done this evil in your sight, that you may be found just when you speak and blameless when you judge. Behold, I was brought forth in iniquity, and in sin my mother conceived me. Behold, you desire truth in the inward parts, and in the hidden part you will make me to know wisdom. Purge me with hyssop, and I shall be clean. Wash me, and I shall be whiter than snow. Make me hear joy and gladness, that the bones you have broken may rejoice." That's guilt-driven. "Hide your face from my sin. Blot out my iniquities. Create in me a clean heart, O God. And renew a steadfast spirit within me. Do not cast me away from your presence. And do not take your Holy Spirit from me." He goes on to say, "Take this away, and then I will show sinners the error in their ways." You see, today, you may be guilt shackled. The devil may have handcuffed you to a sin. It may be a doubting of God. It may be a struggle in life. It may be a sin that you are so ashamed of. Peter had the same thing. You'll recognize that even when Peter sank after taking his eyes off Jesus, Jesus didn't hold his foot on Peter's head and keep him under the water. What did he do? He reached out the hand. Jesus wants your hands today. He wants to undo the shackles today. He wants your heart today. He wants your mind today. He wants your all today. He wants to wipe away the guilt. He wants to wipe away the struggle in life. He wants to renew your faith. So what do we need to do? First things first, we need to forsake the past. Right now, there's somebody who is holding back from God because of the past. Anybody in here not have a past? I have a past. You have a past. We've got to leave the past. Did you see what they did? They do not be afraid. From now on, you will catch men. So when they had brought their boats to land, they forsook all. They left the past. They left the net, and they left them at the feet of Jesus. Today, it's time to leave the past. Secondly, though, what do? We just don't stand there and wonder where to go. We start following Him. They forsook all and followed. They followed Jesus, the one who filled their nets, the one who unshackled their burdens. Yeah, we want to forsake the past. We want to follow Jesus, but there's one other thing we've got to do. We've got to fish on His boat. He's the one who can fill the net. He told them, "I'm going to make you fishers of men." That means we've got to do something. We've got to leave it all. We've got to follow Him. And then we've got to get busy. Today, there may not be any room for Jesus because you've got too many struggles. It may be that you've got too many things holding you back. You know, when when I think of what the Hebrew writer said. When he's talking about running to the finish line, he said, "Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us." The way we run with endurance is what we find before that. He said, you've got to get rid of the things that so easily ensnare or trap or weigh you down. Today there's something, if you are not following Jesus the way you ought to, there is something holding you back. Today it's time to let it go. He called those disciples in the middle of struggle. And He's calling you right now. Do as Dana did. Do as others have done. Surrender it all to Him right now as together we stand and sing.